So we are recording live.
Okay, that's great.
Sounds
so I'll get go ahead. I'll get started then.
All right, go for it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Nature's Way. On today's show, I want to discuss a little about the Earth history of humans as it's been told in the Billy Meyer context. I want to talk about our historical development and how along this evolutionary journey we've been manipulated and exploited from our natural course into one that is today and immersed in a system of belief. Joining me today to help me break this all down is Mark Snyder of Ohio Exopolitics. Mark has been exploring the Billy Meyer contact notes, as well as in recent years, he's been studying the many books that have been published by Billy Meyer on self-development. They could also be described as instructional manuals for life. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Dalta. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Yeah, you sound very focused and very prepared. I'm very impressed with your introduction.
thanks very much. Sometimes I just kind of wing it, but I've been trying to put a little bit more effort into it. I'm finding that the preparation not only, helps the recordings, but it helps me learn a little bit better as well. So that's the idea.
Well, that's a good plan. Seems to be paying off for you, I can tell.
Yeah, we'll see how it works. I know many of my listeners, Mark, are enjoy your podcasts, and they're big fans of your work and the way that you've been piecing everything together.
Yeah, it seems like as of late, it's interesting the way you were talking about, I don't know quite exactly what words you used there, but it seemed apropos where you were saying that Billy's books they're like self-help.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you were saying. And boy, it's just such a perfect way to put it because, it's not something I planned. I never had the intention of going this path, but this seems to be turning into the focus of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I've listened to many of your podcasts and in recent episodes. I'm starting to hear you, start to use those phrases, that describe it as self-help. And really, that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're instructional manuals for life.
Yeah.
The more you read, the more it seems fuller your life becomes. Today, Mark, what I want to do is take the listeners on a little journey into the past.
Okay.
I know you're great at kind of going over the history,
mm-hmm,
of the Earth human. You've talked about it many times. Could you give us an overview of the history of Earth and how we've come to develop the way we have according to how it's been described in the contact notes?
Sure. This is an interesting challenge you put in front of me here. Well, about 5 billion years ago, the Earth formed into a solid mass. There, of course, was no instant creation of human beings or planets, the way our religions say. But about 9 to 12 million years ago, humans started to evolve. And the life form that started the whole evolutionary chain to mammals was a little something that looked like a shrew, called Adelospatialis cromtoni, and it's a mammal from the late Triassic period, about 225 million years ago, and it's thought to be the common ancestor of all modern mammals on the Earth. So this is the process that took place. There's humans evolve naturally, and they evolve from primates, and they're, according to Meyer information, there was a naturally evolving Earth human, which started out as a primate. We could say Homo sapiens sapien, or we can say one of the other earlier groups. But at some point, human spirit forms started to incarnate in these animals. Now, this was, I think, about 4.5 million years ago, to be a little more precise, is when we first started to see naturally evolving Earth humans. Now, what actually happened sometime after that, like if we go back 133,000 years ago and 150,000 years ago, 150,000 years ago, we had a group of extraterrestrial humans who came here, and they came here from the Pleiaren system. The leader of that group was a man named Pelagon, who was extremely highly evolved, and he was benevolent, and he treated the Earth humans fairly. He had tremendous abilities in his material consciousness. He could move things with his mind. Sometimes he was said to be able to be seen literally teleporting himself. Incredible. I mean, he was what's called an Ishwish, or a king of wisdom, in the Lyrian language. See, and there's so much information here that it's like, once I start, it's like a fire hose, so you can stop me wherever you want.
No, that's all right. Keep rolling. Okay. The main thing I'm trying to, I suppose, perspective I'm trying to give people is how we reached this point that we're in today, where we're living in a world that is immersed with religion.
Oh yeah. I'll try to slowly move myself in that direction. But so we have a naturally evolving Earth human on the Earth that appeared about, more precisely, about 4.5 million years ago. And you almost have to get into reincarnation to really understand this as well. While the Earth humans, who were just very primitive humans at this point, were evolving, we had visitation. And by extraterrestrial humans that lived primarily, Pelagon's group, my understanding, were Pleiaren. Now, if I use that term, I don't know how many people listening to your podcast will be familiar with that. The Pleiaren are the group that's currently in contact with Billy Meyer right now. Their ancestors are our ancestors. And our ancestors came from Lyra Vega. Now, space, as we know it, is much different than what our scientists think. Our universe is divided into seven layers, and it's roughly egg-shaped. And these layers, they counter-rotate against one another. The fourth layer in that creation is where all the planets and the galaxies and the solar systems reside, in this fourth layer, in these counter-rotating layers. Now, that fourth layer is also subdivided into seven different layers, seven different space-time configurations. Now, the people that I'm talking about, they're human beings, they're from the Milky Way galaxy, but they're in a different space-time configuration than us. So if you travel, if you had a tremendously advanced ship and you could travel from the Earth to the Pleiades, and these people are not Pleiadians, but if we traveled to the Pleiades, which is about 480 light years away, and then we went another 80 light years into a different space-time configuration. There's a star system called the Pleiaden star system, and there's a planet there called Era, and it's very, very Earth-like. It has almost an identical biosphere. In fact, they brought plants and animals from Earth to this planet a long, long time ago. Now, when people traveled to Earth, they traveled to settle on Earth. And Pelagon was this king of wisdom. He's a human being in the fifth stage of evolution. And a lot of this information I'm covering now is not mainstream at all. So anywhere along here where you want me to elaborate on something, we can do that. So Pelagon was very benevolent. He had thousands of people who came to the Earth with him. They set up a civilization. This was about 150,000 years ago. And the first 1,000 years or so of this civilization went very, very well. Well, eventually Pelagon died. He lived about 2,000 years old by the strength of his own spirit. And another Ishwish took over who was not nearly as qualified as Pelagon. And this whole civilization started to decline. And eventually there was a tremendous war, which almost wiped out all life on the planet.
So if you don't mind me just interrupting there, Mark.
Sure, please do.
So when we go back into our history and we went back to the beginning there of the emergence of life on the planet, and we quickly moved along there up to about 130,000 years ago. So at this point in time, we had humans who had developed naturally through the natural course of evolution on the planet. Mm-hmm. And at some point, there was a race of extraterrestrial human beings that had basically migrated from the far reaches of the universe to the planet Earth. So you have a lowly evolved human being and you have a highly evolved human being.
Exactly.
Both living in the same place. It's where could things go wrong?
Well, after Pelagon's society collapsed and went into chaos and war, everything kind of degenerated, and there was a time, several centuries, where no one came to the Earth because it was pretty devastated. Now, that was about 150,000 years ago. About 133,000 years ago was when the era of Atlantis and Lemuria began, and another Ishwish came to the Earth. He was a man of obvious Lyrian descent, and he came here with his wife, and they brought thousands of people with them again, and they settled this island continent somewhere between South America and Europe. And this was the beginning of Atlantis. Now, another group came, and they entered into the Gobi Desert, and they built, this was a complete another group, they built what's called Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta, which were underground, and they were connected by caverns, and above that they had the city of Lemuria. And so you had Atlantis and Lemuria, and they were thousands of miles apart. They were separated, and that was done on purpose so that there wouldn't be warfare. They were doing that trying to ensure that there wasn't warfare. Well, there was another individual that came here named Eris the Barbarian. And Eris came from Beta Centauri. Now, don't confuse that with Alpha Centauri, which is very close. Beta Centauri is about 350 light years from the Earth. And it's very interesting that if you look at the term Beta Centauri, it's Hadar is the term used in Arabic. And it's interesting that Hadar comes from the Arabic root meaning to be present, to be on the ground, to be civilized. So it's very interesting that an ancient people would look out at a star way off in the distance and use the term, which means to be present, to be settled, to be civilized, which to me is a very strong evidence that we had this contact that I'm describing. Now, Eris, the barbarian, brought with him 200 leaders and sub-leaders. He had about 200 leaders. One of his leaders was a great scientist named Semyaza. Semyaza mated with an earth woman. This again is about 133,000 years ago. Mated with an earth woman, and the offspring was named Adam. And you can look in Contact Report 191 and you can get a closer idea of what this was all about. Adam was about 16 feet tall. And for some reason, the offspring between these people from different places in our universe and the Earth humans tend to be very, very big people. So just as a kind of a side note, the Atlanteans had a great fleet of ships, about 4.8 3 million people in their army, and they had about 123,000 of these beam ships that were like one-man ships. Well, one thing led to another, and mostly it was the function of Eris and his group that stirred up this great trouble between the Atlanteans and the Lemurians. There was this great war. The Atlanteans melted Lemuria to the ground. Some of the people got out of Lemuria and they went to our asteroid belt and they attached a drive system to one of these fairly large meteors and they sent it to the Earth. And it appeared larger and larger as it approached the Earth. It began to glow. And when it reached the top of the Earth's atmosphere, it emitted a great sound, which in Contact 59, I think, is described as an unbearable howling sound, and I can just imagine that in my mind. And there was this fantastic heat that came from this asteroid. It started to glow like a supernova. It reached something like 34,000 degrees, and just the heat that was literally burning our atmosphere, and it caused whole regions of land to burn. And it exploded about 172 kilometers in the air. It just blew apart. And, you know, it was like small nuclear strikes when these pieces come down to the Earth. And there were two large parts of it, like two titanic fists, which crashed in the Atlantic Ocean. And this caused the giant wave, which swamped Atlantis at about 12,000 years ago. And all the scientists, all the archaeologists recognize that about 12,000 years ago, there was a great meteor that pretty much wiped our whole, you know, planet clean. Mm-hmm. So there's a small group of people on the Earth at this time that are still surviving. And this is where we start the whole process of pulling ourselves out of the rubble of this. And this is where we get influenced by some negative extraterrestrials. I can go into that if you want, if you had any questions or.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm trying to get to the root of where the exploitation started with the natural evolving human beings.
Started even prior to that. I'd have to go back 389. I think it's 389,000 years ago.
Yeah, I know the story kind of changes, you know, back and forth. But I think it's been described many times how the natural evolving human being was exploited basically into believing that these extraterrestrials that were coming to Earth throughout Earth's history were posing themselves as gods.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the word God had developed, and you know, has kind of made its way up continuously, you know, into where we are today. Would you be able to give a kind of perspective on that?
Oh yeah,
and more recent, you know, in the more recent Earth history.
Sure. So 12,000 years ago was the great war between Atlantis and Lemuria, where they used this meteor as a weapon, and that devastated the entire Earth. There was a small group barely surviving that were left. The ecosystem was destroyed. And if we go back about 5,000-6,000 years ago, another one of these people from Beta Centauri came. His name was Eris the 11th. He was 11 descendants from Eris the Barbarian, who I was talking about earlier. And he set up a kind of a tyranny here on Earth. And he was eventually murdered by his son, Jehovan, and probably pronounced Yahovan. And Yahovan ruled the Earth until about 3,660 years ago. He let himself be called the Creator. They created a religion. They demanded to be worshipped. And they were cruel to each other, even. And that's why the sons would often murder their fathers. Yahovan was murdered by his son, Yehave, or Jehave, as we would pronounce it, 340 years into his father's reign. Jehave, or Yehev, was a megalomaniac like his father. He proclaimed himself to be the creator of the universe and demanded to be celebrated as such, demanded to be worshipped. So we have these extraterrestrial humans with this high technology, and they've created a tyranny on the Earth. The people that are alive here on the Earth, they've because of the destruction, the sudden destruction of everything, they have no understanding of who they are, where they're from. They have no understanding of the universe. So Jehave was murdered. He was a megalomaniac like his father, Jehovan. And eventually his son, Erisame, murdered his father, Jehave. Now, Erisame wanted to take all the power. He had two younger brothers. Interesting. Their names are interesting. Ptah and Solom, who stopped him. So Erisame had 72,000 followers, but his younger brothers put together an army which opposed him, and the forces of Ptah and Solom forced Erisame off of the earth. But eventually, he secretly returned, and he went to these old cubicle constructions, which were far below the Giza Plateau. This area had not been inhabited for about 70,000 years. And there's a big, you know, as you're probably aware, there's a big debate on how old the Great Pyramid is. The mainstream people say it's 3,000 years old or something like that. Zahiwas and Robert Schock and these other historians say, well, if you look at the Sphinx, there's obvious weathering here from water. So the whole, and that you have to go back at least 10,000 years to get to the point where you have a bunch of water in the Giza Plateau right now. It's a desert. But in any case, Erasame went to these old cubicle constructions that are far below the Great Pyramid and deep within the earth, and they established themselves as the Giza intelligences. And Erasame, he ruled until about 3010 BC. Now, here's where it gets really controversial as far as the Maya material is. And Hen, who was also called, we would say, Jehovah. Now, there was really no letter J at this time, so he's probably called Jehovah. He took over from Erasame. Now, Jehovah, and this is about 2080 BC, it's the same Jehovah in the Old Testament. He's the one that we worship today, or many Christian groups or Jewish groups still worship him as the creator of the universe. And think about the significance of that. If you go through the Old Testament, there's even it clearly documents what he has done, particularly in Numbers, 31:7, where they committed genocide and wiped out all the Midianites except for the virgins, which they kept for themselves. So we have this in the Old Testament, this very strange history. And today, I think this religious programming is still in effect. Mm-hmm. And what I see is very interesting. I think you could probably do a whole line of research on this. What I see is what the Giza intelligences wanted to do was to create a cognitive dissonance in the people that they were ruling. So they would give them two opposing ideas, which would cause a war within themselves. And that would shut down their perceptive ability. And it would make them vulnerable to being hypnotized or led. And particularly in the Christian religion, I think that's really, really obvious, because we have the image of the Jesus figure who is suffering and dying on a cross, and yet he is taught as your savior. He's the creator of the universe. So the subconscious mind, you know, it sees this symbol, and it sees this visual of this suffering individual. And yet at the same time, he's supposed to understand that this is the creator of the universe. So there's a conflict there. I don't know if you're kind of following me or not on this. There's tremendous conflict here. And I think that was done intentionally. I think the CIA uses the same kind of mind control techniques today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, we're starting to see, if we reflect upon that there are roughly 4,000 religions on Earth, we can clearly see that we're a planet and humanity that's lost its way. We've lost our universal compass, so to speak. From the day we're born, humans are raised into a form of belief. And the question I want to ask people, and I want people to ask themselves, is how different would the world be if we had adhered to an altogether different set of principles based on a system that encouraged us to ask questions and experiment to search and explore the real sense and purpose of our life. So we can see that you've really done a great job of describing basically a long history of manipulation, mm-hmm. and exploitation of the natural evolving human being on Earth. And that has continued all the way up to today. So the world has developed with the mindset of belief. We're always resigning ourselves to some form of belief system. And the problem is, when people have developed in such a way that they always look outside of themselves for answers.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the mind operates, it's really not functioning according to how it was supposed to, which is supposed to be in accordance with the laws of nature. So we're at this point now where we have to, you know, where does Billy Meyer come into this? Where does the play Aaron? What is their part? And what is this all about? Why are we even discussing Billy Meyer? you know, and I think it's those pieces of the puzzle that that I'm trying to, you know, provide our listeners with, the new listeners out there that have just, you know, came on and are searching for answers, and they've just got to this.
You know, Delta, sorry to interrupt you, but you know what's so strange about this for me personally is I try with all my effort to avoid controversy because I'm just not into that. I'm not a person that wants to debate people. I don't want to confrontate, you know, have confrontations with people. I want people to make up their own minds. But a diligent search of the truth seems to end up in controversy. I listen to what I'm saying now, and I'm like, my goodness, how controversial this really is. It's just stunning.
I don't think any reasonable person, I don't think any reasonable person would argue that there is a complete confusion on the earth. You know, again, let's go back to, there's roughly 4,000. If you do a Google search, it's something like 4,200 religions that are on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's the dominant religions. You have Christianity, you have
Islam
and so
Hinduism,
forth.
Hinduism, Buddhism, yeah. Folk religion.
But, you know, you have to ask yourself, where did we go wrong? And I think we're provided some of those answers, you know, in the contact notes of Billy Meyer. Now, I would never tell anybody to believe anything that we're saying. I always, you know, I'll always repeat this, but you can, if you're interested in this and you go out and you want to learn more, the contact notes, many of them, you know, you'll read and you can't necessarily prove the history that we've just kind of covered, but there are many corroborations of that information. Scientists are continually, like you talked about Atlantis, finding evidence to suggest there's a consistency in the contact notes. I know what you're saying. I it wasn't that long ago, Mark, that I was sitting, on a weekly basis to church and sitting down among, you know, friends and family. So it kind of goes against my grain to want to stir the pot and upset people. But I think we have a responsibility to really discuss these things and ask questions. You know, there's nothing wrong with asking questions. We're not telling anybody what to believe. We're just raising some questions. Let me just read a few things here.
Sure.
So I want to kind of discuss the opening forward from Bernadette Brand in the book The Way They Live. And what I'm trying to help people recognize here is that regardless of your background, your religion, there is a common thread among humanity that really brings us together, and that is what Billy calls the laws of creation. So, reading the opening lines from the foreword in the book The Way They Live, Bernadette Brand provides us with terms which draw a common thread among Earth people. In one form or another, embedded deep within our human nature, we share a striving toward peace, love, freedom, and harmony. Regardless of our philosophy, belief, or political perspective, we are reminded that our human nature is driven by the same life motor. These terms are among the many laws of nature that reveal the common thread all of humanity strives to achieve. They are the universal laws woven into the fabric of the universe and, of course, our humanity. Unfortunately, we've deceived ourselves of this fact and resigned and shackled our life to modes of belief. We've programmed our existence with the illusion that to achieve these higher states of being, we must first believe. That is to say that we have been misled to think the prerequisite for the realization of love, peace, freedom, and harmony is fulfilled only under the false pretext of belief. Although, yes, we could say that there are elements of truth among the countless religions, it is, however, as Bernadette Brand describes, that belief is not the determining means for mastering life. It is learning and knowledge.
Hmm.
And, you know, with that kind of on the table, Mark, would you be able to describe the difference between what many people understand as God, the creator of heaven and earth, and the creation, which Billy describes, the universal consciousness? Where did this, could you speak a little bit again about this word God and the difference between God and the unit and creation?
That's a very good question. Let me just say that to begin with. The term God, I believe, has appeared on Earth. It appeared on Earth when there were human beings here who had very advanced technologies and also very advanced abilities in their material consciousness. There is a word called Ishwish that the Maya people talk about. There are seven stages in human evolution. We here on Earth are on stage two. A king of wisdom or an Ishwish is in stage five. So these are people, even though some people still at that level go astray. And that's what we had on the Earth. We had gods that were not really abiding by the creational natural laws, which we could go over in a minute. So we in our history now have a very, very deeply imprinted confusion that was created when these gods were on the earth, when they were saying that they were the creators of the universe and they were demanding worship and sacrifice, which is a very interesting addition to all this. When the gods often wanted sacrifice, which would either involve the killing of animals or the killing of people. It was very, very strange if you think about it. Now, creation, there is a universal consciousness. There's a super intelligence in our universe that is behind the evolution of our universe. It's neutral. It's neutral positive. It isn't a father. If you go out and try to jump off a building, your father is going to stop you. Or if you're a kid and you're trying to run in the traffic, your father is going to grab you and overrule your free will. Now the creation, the universal consciousness, is not going to do that. It's completely neutral. And what it does is it creates human spirit forms that live many, many lifetimes over literally hundreds of thousands, millions, even billions of years to evolve. And the human being is kind of like boots on the ground for the universal consciousness. The universal consciousness, what's described in the German, it's a Wesenheit, which is a term that says the Wesenheit does not have a free will functioning in terms of its evolution. In other words, it evolves according to a like a predetermined pattern. And if you look at the creation, it expands for 155 trillion years. So we had something similar to the Big Bang, which the Meyer information calls the Zohar. And our universe will expand for 155 trillion years. It works on this schedule. The universal consciousness has no personality. It's always neutral positive. It's never angry. It's never jealous. You hear about the Old Testament God being jealous and being angry. These are human ideas, human terms, because these gods, in fact, were human. Jehovah was a human. That's why he behaved in the way he did. The universal consciousness is neutral positive. It radiates love. And that's why I love when Billy describes this. And he said, for example, it says, love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. So the one thing about the creation is it's always logical. It doesn't interfere with your life. It doesn't punish one group of people and wipe a group of people out. It doesn't create a heaven that you go to or a hell where you're judged. No, the universal consciousness radiates love. And every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. So what we have, Delta, deeply embedded in our psyche, mm-hmm. is a confusion about the superintelligence that's behind our universe. Mm-hmm. And it's like our consciousness has been scarred. That's one way I could put it, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great way to describe it. I mean, it's not hard to come together it's not hard to come to the conclusion that you know, through these modes of belief that were easily exploited, and that you know, what's different about the laws of nature that is in the teaching of Billy is that there's no requirement of belief, mm-hmm. and in actual fact that the foundation of this teaching, it's discouraged that you believe anything that's been taught or mm-hmm. said. It's encouraged that you go out and you spend time in nature and observe, you know, the world around you, and start to recognize your own inner nature and how that connects you, you know, collectively with everything else. If you take the time to walk in the woods and observe the diversity, let's say, of a forest, there are countless varieties of trees, shrubs, insects, and animals, mm-hmm. and it's a thriving ecosystem. Mm-hmm. That's dependent on one another. Mm-hmm. They all strive and thrive collectively. Using the bees as an example, many trees and plants are dependent on bees for pollination, but mm-hmm. equally, the bees are dependent on the plants to collect their nectar. You know, so that's just one simple example of the interdependentness, you know. Mm-hmm. In much the same way, if we observe humanity, with its diverse shades and cultures, humans are not much different. We may believe that we're separate, you know, a self-reliant species. But the truth is that although we can enjoy and respect the various cultures and shades of life that humanity brings, there's a common thread, and that thread is that we're all searching for the same thing, and that is love, peace, wisdom, and knowledge. Do you know anybody that is not searching for that in their life? And those are laws of nature. Each one of those is a law of nature, the law of love, the law of peace, the law of freedom, and the law of harmony. And they're just a small, you know, few. There are countless laws of creation and laws of nature that we can begin to learn. And once we start to learn these laws of nature, we'll start to see that there really is an interconnectedness among humanity that doesn't require belief, doesn't require conflict. It brings us together, but at the same time, it respects, you know, just like there are shades. If you go into a forest and you look at the canopy of the forest, there are many shades of green and the many different types of trees. And that's just like the shades of, that's just like our various, you know, cultures that the world is made up of. But that ecosystem is able to thrive and survive because in reality, it functions according to laws of nature, you know? Mm-hmm. Would you be able to go into and discuss those laws of nature, those four, sure, love, peace, freedom, and harmony, Mark?
Well, I'll go through these. I have five here that I found, okay, in my studies. I'll go through them and we can talk about them. First is the law of love. It refers to the highest form of love called effective love, which I was talking about has nothing to do with romance whatsoever. That's the love of creation, the radiating love of creation. You talked about the bees, and that's a great point. The law of striving, which is the fundamental law of all evolution, where without striving, there is no life. And I always say if you're depressed, one of the things you can do is to get to strive more. And sometimes life requires us to strive at very, very intense levels, I've noticed. And if you're not striving enough, you will not have happiness. So I'll just read just a little bit from page 102. It says, striving means delectation, which is satisfaction, in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life. So the law of striving says in order to be happy, you have to be working, focused on something. It might just be cleaning out your garage. It might be working on your day job. It might be, you know, organizing your closet. But to be happy, it's the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there really is no life. Now, there's also something called the law of harmony, which you started to talk about. Now, the law of harmony says that there's a bipolar structure and composition to everything that exists. There's a positive and there are negative. For example, I believe in the atoms, there's always an equal number of protons and electrons. I think there's always an equality between the positive charge and the negative charge. By the same way, the negative and the positive are two forces which belong together and should never be separated, because they depend on one another. So the law of harmony is about creating a balance in your thinking. And to be within the law of harmony means you're neutral positive, which means you're optimistic, you're relaxed, you're cheerful, you're confident. So that's what we're learning when we study the book, The Might of Thoughts. Now there's also something called the law of prosperity and abundance, which says every life form and every human being has everything in plentiful abundance in order to live and evolve without having to live in want. Now, because we have violated, we're not living, mm-hmm, by the law of love and the law of striving and laws related to population, this, yeah, particular law is breaking down. It's critical that we correct, mm-hmm, this problem. Now, the other law is the law of universal creation, which says every thought that is enlivened by might and power must, as a cause, also bring in effect. So that talks about the might of your thinking, the might of your thoughts. And that's a law. it's directly proportional. The power of your thoughts, the more powerful your thoughts, the more those thoughts will affect your circumstances. Now, if you have neutral positive thoughts that are very powerful, you'll have very beneficial circumstances, good circumstances in your life. If your thoughts are very negative, the power of your negative thoughts will bring very negative circumstances into your life. So this is the law of universal creation. It's also talked about in The Might of Thoughts. And that was a quick overview.
Yeah, no, that was great. You mentioned there the law of abundance, and that is an interesting law because obviously we've really we've exploited and gone against the law of abundance. Taking the Western world as an example, we've really exploited all of the resources and, exploit the resources of many other nations around the world. Mm-hmm. So it comes back to, the law of harmony.
And love.
And love, regardless of, your love is my love, your sorrow is my sorrow, your harmony is my harmony, and your freedom is my freedom. They're all connected there. So if we're exploiting, one person on the other side of the world, it very much will come back to us in some form or another. So that was well explained, Mark.
Do you want to go into population at all today, or do you want to?
I think we could touch on it, and okay. Then in another episode, and that's kind of what I was kind of teetering on there. Mm-hmm. I know you've been reading about this more and more lately, and I kind of was I spent a little bit of time on it, but kind of got away from it, but. It's a very interesting subject. It's obviously a controversial subject. I know you've heard people say that you could fit.
You could fit
the 9 billion people or so that we have on the planet in the state of Texas. And that's fair enough. But, I think an honest and reasonable, logical thinking person is really not looking at it properly. It's not about fitting people into a section of the world. Of course you could do that, you could consolidate all those people, but could you have harmony?
Let me tell you what they do, and I want to get into this because I fell for the same reasoning. If you have, for example, I'll just cover this quickly. If you have a 2,000 square foot house, which I think is roughly what I have, and you allow 10 square feet for every person, you could theoretically fit 200 people into your house. I mean, and that's a medium house. I mean,
yeah, I'm liking where this is going. It's a perfect example.
I mean, it's insane to think.
And now here's the other thing, because we're talking on the micro level here, right? We're using a house as the analogy. Now you fit 200 people into that house. Have you ever had a party, Mark, and you ran out of food?
Oh yeah.
Well, I've done that. I've miscalculated. I only have 2 bathrooms. Now you've got a line of people. So do you have the resources?
That's the problem.
Is your house functionally prepared to house that many people?
It's not going to last very long, is it?
So mechanically, it's not going to operate well. There's not going to be harmony among, those people who are shoulder to shoulder. It's a great way of looking at it. Now, you fit all 9 billion people in the state of Texas.
Let me run through a few quick things. I agree with you. There's 9 billion people on the earth, really. That's what the number is. But most people will say there's only 7 billion. So, and right. Let's turn them all into Texans. We're going to fit all 7 billion people into Texas. And that means they eat beef, right? So we're going to give each 7 billion people one cow over their lifetime.
And here's the thing, just to interrupt you, if we do that, everybody has to be Republicans as well. Remember that?
Okay, I got you. So let's allow 2 acres per cow, and that's a good rule of thumb because, you know, for example, if you have 11 cows on 20 acres, that'd be 1.8 acres per cow. But let's allow 2 acres per cow. That means the cow can actually graze without destroying the field that it's on. And it can be grass-fed, and we don't have to worry about mad cow disease and stuff like that. I mean, we could go down that rabbit hole if we wanted to, but I just want to do this as an example. So if you have one cow for each person, that's 2 times 7 billion, okay? Because you need 2 acres for one cow, and there's 7 billion cows, one cow for each person. That's 14 billion acres and all we're doing is supplying the meat for these people, okay, that are now crammed into Texas. So that's 14 billion acres. Well, if you convert 14 billion acres for these cows, that comes out to about 21 million square miles, almost 22 million square miles. Just to let you know, there are about 3.8 million square miles in the United States if we include Alaska. There's almost 3.9 million square miles in Canada, 6.6 million square miles in Russia, and 6.8 in South America. So we need 21 million square miles to support one cow for each person. That means we're going to have all of the United States, all of Canada, all of Russia, and all of South America just for these cows to graze to support this. So it would take all the square miles in the United States, Canada, Russia, and South America to feed 7 billion people one cow during their lifetime. Now, this gets more interesting because one cow in your lifetime isn't really a lot of beef, although we think it is. Let's break this down. A 1,200-pound steer produces about 500 pounds of meat. So if a person is assigned a cow to their lifetime, they have 500 pounds of beef to eat over the course of a 100-year lifetime or a 50-year lifetime. For the time being, let's assume that the normal lifetime of a human being is between 50 and 100 years. So if someone lives 100 years and they eat 5 pounds of meat per year, they would consume a single cow in their lifetime. That's not very much beef, 5 pounds per year. However, it's more likely that a person would eat maybe 2 pounds of beef per week. So let's calculate what a realistic situation would be. So if you're eating 2 pounds of beef per week, 2 times 52 weeks in a year, times 100-year lifespan, that's 10,400 pounds of beef. If you divide that by 500, which is how much weight each cow is, a normal person with a 100-year lifespan would eat 20.8 cows in a lifetime. If they live 50 years, that would be 2 pounds of beef per week, 50 times 52 weeks in a year, times 50 years, that's 5,200. Which would be 10 cows per year. So when I'm estimating 21 million square miles for the grazing, that is extremely low estimate because I'm only given a person one cow per lifetime. But a guys like me and guys like you, Delta, would easily eat between 10 and 20 cows.
Yeah, and that's an amazing statistics there, Mark. Thanks for going over that. And what's so unreasonable, I find about the scientists and those sustainability, so-called sustainability experts, when they talk about, if we need to live, they'll continually say, well, we need to live more like the people and the likes of India and Eastern countries. They consume a 1/10 of what we consume. We need to live more like that. But, you know, the reason that those people are living the way that they are living, which is basically in poverty,
yes,
is because there is so many of them. There's yes. not enough resources to go around. And, you know, we're told continually that we need to be more sustainable. We need to, you know, use less water. We need to, you know, so on and so forth. But again, if you go back to you talking about cows there, I think as far as I understand it, one cow drinks up to like 500 gallons of water today.
Really? That's, I didn't know that.
It's crazy amount of water that one cow needs. That demand, obviously, for the meat comes from the humans. Should we not all have, you know, like you said, the law of abundance? We should have an equal opportunity,
sure,
to the resources that are available to us. But in this, you know, delusional thinking, we will accept that, okay, well, in the Western world, we can have this abundance, but it's okay that in other parts of the world, they can live in poverty. We'll tolerate that. You know, and it's so rude and ignorant, and mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be the death of us, you know, if we continue on this path. And the answer is obviously that there's too many people on the planet, and there's too much demand for these resources that we don't have. And they'll always say again that, you know, technology will catch up to it. But look at that, Mark. I don't know about you, but when you go to the store now and you look at the quality of the food that you're getting, there's a huge movement of people that are moving away from this monoculture of consumerism. You know, the quality of the food is terrible, and it's full of pesticides and all these things, and that is the technology that we're talking about, the advancement of the food industry. The only reason that they're able to grow those crops so intensely is by using these pesticides,
mm-hmm.
And genetically modifying these foods to be able to withstand the pesticides that they're spraying them with.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently moved to the country because I'm personally, I want to get away from that. You know, I want to live a more organic lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And, not everybody can really realistically do that, you know. So really, we're all forced into these, dense areas, and we're all made to, you know, feed our bodies with these polluted foods. You know, that isn't a reasonable solution. It's a terrible solution.
The answer is
if we reduce our numbers, there'll be less demand. There'll be more, land mass to provide for a more healthy population size.
You know, I had Frosty Wooldridge on the show. It's been months and months ago, and he has a great book called America on the Brink. And one of the things he told me, that there are 52 lanes of traffic around Beijing in China, and I didn't believe him, Delta. I didn't believe him, and I told him right on the air I didn't believe him, and I had to actually go out on YouTube and see it.
That's mental.
It
52
is.
Lanes of traffic side by side.
Yes. Going around the city.
That's craziness.
It's what you're saying when you said a bad solution. That's taken too extreme.
It's a bad solution. It really is. You know, but, you know, it's like we adapt and we become tolerant of these things. But, you know, we shouldn't. We should just use more reasonable thinking.
Right.
You know, and people start to look at that when you talk about overpopulation. I've discussed overpopulation with friends. They immediately say, "Oh, you're a tyrant! You know, how can you tell people how many kids they're supposed to have?" Well, you really can't. You know, people have to take it upon themselves to educate themselves,
right?
You know, about these things, and then make these reasonable decisions themselves, and then you know, lobby their politicians and so forth to really push for you know, more reasonable. I don't know how you would describe that.
You know, in terms of the show today, I think we've really touched on some very important things that we have to follow up to really investigate. You know, there's just so much information here.
I think that's what I'll do, Mark. I'll go away and do a little bit more homework, and I'd love you to, you know, present what you presented there again, and we can just go into it in more detail. And, you know, because there's so many angles,
sure,
and ethical angles, you know, let's break it down as best we can. And
even religion, you know, we just barely touched on religion, you know what I'm
right.
saying?
Yeah.
So,
Mark, I'd like to let the listeners, know where they can find your work. Where can they find your podcasts?
Well, the easiest thing to do is to Google Ohio Exopolitics. And because there's a whole bunch of, I don't know, they're just popping up. You can listen to it on Blog Talk. It's on Player FM now. It's on something called TuneIn. There's a couple of folks that are putting my shows out on YouTube, a guy named Skill Solon, and there's another YouTube guy on Contemplate Creation. There's also Podbean is putting my stuff out. I'm on Revolution Radio 4 to 6. So just Google Ohio EXO Politics, and you'll find it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you everyone for joining us today. If you'd like to listen to more shows just like this one, please like and subscribe and hit the little notification bell there. And we'll see you again in the near future. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you later.